Hey everybody, welcome back to the Breaking Western podcast. We are in season three. I wish I could roll my R's. That'd be so much cooler.
Three.
You can. There it is. Touching on marketing and media this season from one side of the Western industry to the other and all the places in between. Today is, as we like to say, no exception. Abby, who are we talking to today?
To be honest, I feel like our guest today is a bit of an enigma. He's someone that a lot of people follow, but unless you're following his personal account, you rarely see his face. You just see, what do the kids call it? His dank memes.
Dank memes.
Did I just become 80 years old? I don't know. But he does a lot of amazing stuff. Wake and Bake Radio. He's got, honestly, the most bomb-ass merch store I've ever seen.
Yes.
Is starting a really cool vintage project. I am just in awe of someone who has a mind that works like that. They make me laugh out loud every time. I think I've said enough. Today we have the original country DJ party host, twangin' and bangin'. Since 2007, the disco cowboy himself, David Wrangler.
That was a great introduction.
Thank you.
And I'm going to roll right into my commentary on your introduction. And it's funny that you mentioned the meme thing. And whenever someone asks me, so, like, what is Vinyl Ranch exactly? Like, I kind of like, oh, you make t-shirts? Or, oh, you're a meme page? Or, oh, I thought you just threw parties? Or I thought you did something else? And it's kind of funny because anytime somebody discovers Vinyl Ranch, it's usually they're at their own point on the line. So they'll just kind of discover one facet of it and mm-hmm. have completely in the dark to the other offerings or the other parts of the brand. So it's funny that you mentioned memes, that it was, I was curious to hear your introduction.
Did I get a passing grade?
All of those things are true. Twangin' and bangin' since 07, straight out of Houston. Vinyl Ranch started in Houston. It's an urban cowboy homage, but also an homage to Saturday Night Fever, disco era New York City. Mm. Also an homage to kind of like Nashville, the classic Nashville aesthetic and sound, and I could go in 50 directions.
Well, let's go in all of them, because I think that's what's so interesting is that there are so many, like you said, so many facets mm-hmm. to what you do. There's all of these little pieces that if you were to look at them individually, I don't think you would really be able to understand how they all fit together. So right. tell us who you are, what you do, how you got here, what is Vinyl Ranch? How did that evolve?
Long story, way long, and this is a long-form conversation, so this will be long story long.
Oh, I love it. Let's get into it.
Vinyl Ranch is a lifestyle brand. Primarily, it's my lifestyle, and it's my life. So all I'm really doing is living my life and sharing it with other people via all of these amazing gadgets and media outlets that we have now that are in, you know, that we shoot from the hip, shoot from our pockets. But it really started as... I'll just talk about Vinyl Ranch, the beginnings of Vinyl Ranch, really. I threw myself a birthday party when I was 27 years old, and at that point, I was a nightclub DJ, and I was DJing rap music, electronic music, indie music, all sorts of things, kind of all in this spicy pot of gumbo. So if you came to one of my parties back then, I was mostly kind of all over the place and serving you all kinds of music, and it was a good time. So my friend Lee Walker and I, who I worked with at this little coffee shop in near downtown Houston, he was a bassist in this really popular indie rock band. He was the most peculiar dude. The first time I met him, I was like, this guy's really special. He's 6'7". He's from Argentina. He is just like this really oddball guy, but he knew so much about country music, but you never would have, never in a million years associated this guy with country music. But him and I created this party together. And it was supposed to be a one-off event, and we came up with the name Vinyl Ranch. And then it just kind of became this local, I mean, this is pre-social media, this is 07, so I think we had a MySpace, we had a MySpace page. That was our social media flex at that point. pre-Instagram, pre-all that stuff. So it was word of mouth, it was old school marketing, it was, we're going to go find the dopest poster designer we know, we're gonna make the coolest poster, and we're gonna hit all the independent record stores and coffee shops and cafes and all the spots where cool kids hung out. We wanted cool kids at our parties. So we had this single event first, and we had no plans to do it again. And then 2 months, you know, over the next month or two, we had people beating down doors, emails, local press was messaging me, like, we heard about this crazy country DJ party. Like, who does that? So we'd never heard of this. So we essentially created this DJ party that was a mashup of, my idea was, okay, I know how to DJ records in a nightclub, and I know how to rock a party, and I have some country records, and I came up in a country music family. And Lee's contribution was, you know, he had his own contribution. So we showed up and did this party in this really nasty bar, like kind of near the Greyhound station in Houston downtown. And that paints a picture for anybody who lives in a major city. Anytime you go near the Greyhound station, it's just a little peculiar. Nine times out of nine, it's pretty peculiar. So we did this party at a bar called Leon's Lounge, and it was one of those spots where you could get like $1.50 Red Dog tall boy, and they had shuffleboard, bikers hung out there, burnouts hung out, burnt out, and people that were getting off the Greyhound bus from Huntsville State Penitentiary were also hanging out there. And then all of our hipster friends, like the, you know, the real hipsters, like 2006.
The OG hipsters. This reminds me of like this outlaw country meets like a big city millennials.
Exactly. What's so funny is we didn't do anything intentionally. We were just living our expression in real time. So there was no premeditation. There was no, we're going to go cook this thing up in a lab, and here it is. We were just, not to make any comments about pre-social media reality, but there was less, I don't want to say less thought, but things were just more organic. They weren't so manufactured or engineered the way that they seem to be now. I'm 41 years old. I was born in 1979, and I wear that shit on my chest, on my heart. I'm the last disco baby. I mean, 1979 was kind of when the plane veered downward towards the ground. It crashed and burned shortly after. But so I grew up with 90s hip-hop culture and remix culture, and I was always kind of a student by proxy of remix culture, just by and large, just living it. Not having to study it, just kind of like being a part of it, being inside of the snow globe. And I always thought that, you know, country music moving forward, that I could create a project where it's like, okay, nobody is really examining this huge canon of like pop culture with country music. So I'm going to examine that under the lens of a remix artist. And that's kind of how Ranch began. And I didn't, it took a few years of that, a few years of Vinyl Ranch for me to have enough hindsight to recognize that that's what I was doing. I didn't do it intentionally. It's just, that's what was happening. At the time I was remixing rap music and club music, and that's kind of what I was known for. I was kind of a popular, around that time, like a pretty popular blog. I don't know if you remember music blogs, but I was a big remixer in that era of music, of dance music, indie music, indie rock. So if you were to Google me in 2007, 8, 9, 10, you would find my remixes on all the biggest blogs in the world. That was in Rolling Stone magazine, Spin magazine, all the music mags kind of showed me some love at that time. So I was already kind of remixing music, and I was, you know, I was into art in high school and used to draw and make remix mashup graphics back then. I didn't really know what I was doing. The idea of mashup didn't even exist. The remix did, for sure. But going back before that, when I was a little kid, I would watch MTV, and I'd watch like a Run DMC music video or a Depeche Mode video, and I'd hear the music, and I just instinctively would sing other words on top of the music.
Oh, really interesting.
I have no way of explaining it, but that's something I've always kind of done. It's like, how can you take two parts and make a new whole out of two parts? You know, just kind of a very generic expression of what a remix is. And that's kind of what I created with Vinyl Ranch. It's like, how do I take elements of pop culture, mix them in with you know, this country music iconography and create something new that's fresh and modern that will tickle your heart if you're, you know, somebody's meemaw in Texas. Or if you are, you know, a kid in New York City who loves Sylvester and loves, you know, he knows scenes from Saturday Night Fever by heart. Long story long, Vinyl Ranch really, if I had to distill it down to a single statement, really is like a hip-hop project about country music in some strange, twisted way.
Which it's super cool. We were listening to some of your music before we got on this call. And
just to pump up.
Just to get ourselves in the right...
The right vibration.
The right vibration. There it is. Vibing and thriving. Yeah. And it's so cool because it really is these two unexpected parts that seemingly don't make any sense, but really work together.
And then when they're together.
They're like, what is this? I don't know, but my whole body is moving.
So when you're talking, I really latched on to the part where you said you are creating a whole out of two parts. Mm-hmm. And I think this is so interesting that you call yourself a lifestyle brand. That's amazing to me, thinking about how you're just out there living life. And then this has also become something that you share and connect with other people through. So talk to us a little bit about when this started to split into you have your personal brand. And I feel like maybe MySpace was a simpler time, which is the understatement of the year.
Yeah.
But in creating something that's kind of your byproduct versus now where we have totally separate pages of personal versus like, brand.
Yeah. Manufactured. Mm-hmm. Manufactured identities versus having a brand that's representative of who you are first and foremost.
Yeah. I should have used the word curated. That's more of a buzzword. Curated, I meant curated experiences, curated everything. It's like I can take a picture of myself in the best light and the best something else, and I can give you a curated run of manufactured images and videos and expressions. Whereas I don't want to say pre-iPhone, but it kind of was pre-iPhone, but pre-social media, I know it. Definitely, you were just kind of in the raw, WYSIWYGing it, what you see is what you get, kind of going that route. I did not associate my name to Vinyl Ranch at all until 2014.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah, well, I had a separate identity that was not interlaced with Vinyl Ranch at all. I like to say PI, or right, BI, like... Before Instagram. Before Instagram in 2014, I obviously had an Instagram, but I didn't put Vinyl Ranch on Instagram. Vinyl Ranch was its own standalone deal, and I typically would DJ under the name Vinyl Ranch. So while Vinyl Ranch initially was just the name of a party, it then became the name of a DJ collective.
Mm.
And I had people coming in and out of the fold over a couple years, that would come on and DJ with me. So there are lots of other players here that have kind of come and made contributions and that still do. So in about 2014, when I decided that I wanted to make Vinyl Ranch more of an international thing, I basically crafted this whole, I don't want to say like master plan. It wasn't that thought out.
But it makes you sound like a little villain. My master plan.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a Dr. Evil component to this whole thing, which if I take my cowboy hat off sometimes, you'll see there's also a resemblance. hat fishing, is that what they call it?
Yes, and yeah. I just learned that, and it has ruined, I don't,
you just
it ruined my
it?
Life for a number of reasons. It opened my eyes, and it made me question some things. It was somewhat jarring. Yeah, like a few months ago.
Men and women always say I have a very nice shaped head, so I'm very fortunate in that regard. But yeah, I made this decision to, you know, I saw that in the music industry, there were a lot of people in the lane that I had been in, which was remixing indie rock music and rap music, mashing all that stuff up. It's kind of the same lane that Diplo was in and Girl Talk and all these people. And that lane, while it was really fresh and exciting to me at that time, I'm one of those people that if other people have what I have, I don't want it anymore. That's its own unique neuroses, and I acknowledge that, and I should probably seek therapy for it. But it's kind of a double-edged sword in the way that being a sociopath or a narcissist is, and that it maybe gives you another couple of tools in your toolkit that help you become more successful or keep you on some sort of track or trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
And I always kind of use that to my advantage. But when I noticed that my lane was becoming increasingly more crowded over the years, I lost interest in it and decided, like, well, okay, I've got this country music thing I do on the side. It's my mistress. So Vinyl Ranch is my dirty mistress that I really wanted to be with her, but I couldn't. So I finally decided to leave my wife and be with the mistress in 2014, after much thought and, you know, counsel from my attorneys and accountants, I decided maybe it's a good idea. Take all my chips and move them over here and start over with this new project. My other project was really successful. I think had I had some of the tools with social media that kids did now, like, I would have been, I think it would have ended differently. And I don't care that it didn't end. I didn't have any expectations. I just started doing something that I loved and it became successful and I had to deal with it.
Mm.
And I think whenever anybody does something like that, it's like, I have to talk to accountants all the time now, which is the lamest thing in the world. But accountants are your best friends. So make friends with accountants and be kind to them and pay them what they're worth, because they do you a solid in the end. But, you know, it's like, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't always have an end in mind. You just know that you enjoy doing something. And that's, in my opinion, is like the best way to approach most projects when you're in your 20s. I guess I was in my 30s. I just kind of decided that I wanted to develop this brand and turn this very simple aspiration and this really simple, pure thing that my friend and I had created and turn it into something that people all over the world could experience. I didn't know quite how I was going to get to that end, but I knew that it could be achieved. And I thought that, well, this Instagram thing is funny. Like, I literally was working in digital marketing at the time. I went to college for marketing, international business, and audio engineering. I went to college twice. So it was kind of while sitting in class in real time, you know, I'd be sitting next to these like 19-year-old bozos, and I was 28. Like that guy has smiled lines like he's a dinosaur. Sitting at the desk, and the professor is, you know, talking about the golden age of advertising in the 80s, and I'm like, my eyes are wide open, and I'm writing down everything I can, and these kids next to me are on Facebook, on the computers. I'm just, sidebar, if you are an adult and you want to go back to school, I think that is the most beautiful thing in the world, because then it comes from a pure place, and you have some sort of idea as to, you know, what you want in life. I wish I had waited. Well, I did wait, but when I meet young people that go to school, my niece just graduated high school last year, and she's in school, and she's like, oh, no, you know, I don't know, man, what I want to do. Like, I just want to, like, be a free spirit. Like, I just love, you know, if I could do anything, I'd just hang out. It's like, well, that's cool. You can float. Now you can shit. You can float until you're damn near 30 with that, you know, ethos. Like, I just want to hang out. I'm like, that's cool. We all just want to hang out.
That's true.
I just think that it came from a pure place, and I didn't have a huge plan in mind. I knew that I had a couple of goals, and that there are points in between where I could have landmarks, I could create landmarks. And one of those, you know, at the time was, okay, I'm doing these parties in Houston every month. Why don't I start doing parties in other cities in Texas? So I started party in Austin whenever I could. And then I, you know, slowly over the next year, you know, I was doing after parties at ACL and, you know, a party at South by Southwest, which I'll tell you later, I grew that into its own brand called Hard Country. It's basically like whenever we're able to pick back up, whatever that looks like in the future, with live music in the style of 2019 and before, you know, we'll be able to retouch on that. But yeah, I just, you know, I thought, well, I need to have, I went back and I looked and researched the Grateful Dead and Rolling Stones and looked at what they did. It's like, okay, they have really dope posters, like this really brilliant iconography, this kind of catalog of logos and imagery, and they have live music events, and they have really great merchandise, and just kind of use that as my model, and also being very like hip-hop about it and doing as much DIY as I could, and just trying to be, you know, a guy that other people wanted to work with and maybe were always kind of questioned and never, you know, I think I heard one of you use the word enigma, which I feel like I'm often, most people describe me as that because they don't really know what I'm going to give to them each time I meet them or hang with them or produce work with them or for them. Just because I think that I've tried to experience as much as I can and put that into my work, and I don't want to ever be accused of being a cliche or a biter, and that's kind of what used me for. And that's, I think, the advantage I have of being in this industry or this lane or whatever you want to call it, occupying this position that I have, is that I came from the 90s where you were more, you place more emphasis on individualism as opposed to fitting in. So if you look, even if you look at 90s rap, for instance, like you never wanted to jock somebody's style. You never wanted to be what somebody already was. You always wanted to be your own thing. I didn't even want to suggest that I wanted to be a thing that people wanted to copy down the road. But you'd rather be in that position than be the latter. So I think that, you know, I looked at some of the, you know, we discussed, you know, some of these ideas about, you know, people imitating someone or someone jocking someone's style or someone stealing someone's voice. And I think there's a lot of that happening right now. And I don't know how old some of these people are, but I think in the kind of the like collective consciousness of the social media right now, people feel like it's a safer bet to steal someone's recipe. And it's not even that they're stealing it, because I don't believe that these kids even recognize that they're stealing anything. But if you're stealing someone's secret sauce, if you're taking someone's secret sauce, you're stealing it. I'm also not one to talk. Like, I'm a remix artist. Like, I take things from people and I turn them into something else. And that's what I feel like is so unique about my brand, is that I'm doing this and in a way that is genuine and is, to my knowledge, had never been done before. And that's what's so special about it. And that's why I think that my brand has been successful. And now you can just come up and see what I've done. And to use the analogy of a book and a recipe, I've kind of laid a recipe out for people so they can pick right up. And they can do Vinyl Ranch, quote unquote. They can, but they can't, because you're 3D printing my expression. My expression was handcrafted over 20 years. Vinyl Ranch has been around since 2007. So I've got years of record collecting, years of relationships, years of roots in the ground, years. And I'm from Texas. I grew up outside of Austin in Hill Country near Luckenbach, where, the song. I was born in Saginaw, Michigan. There's a very famous song.
Oh, no way.
I mean, all of these things that you couldn't even make up. Like, just all of these things in my life have checked all of these boxes. I've been a DJ. I've been working in nightlife since I was 18 years old and one day, for the most part. So my entire life I've been in nightclubs, music venues. I've been a club promoter, a DJ, a bartender, a bar manager, liquor inventory manager, sound guy. I've had to, merch person. I've cleaned every corner. I've dusted with a white glove every ledge. Like, I've done it all at this point. So when someone steps up and tries to hijack my identity or the voice of my brand, it's kind of like I feel bad for them. don't you want to have your own legacy that isn't someone else's?
Oh, that's true.
There's a really great Lil Wayne interview that came out a long time ago, and he essentially said the same thing. And it's not, that's not a unique position, really. I just think that I wish people would spend more time on self-discovery than just emulating someone else's artistic expression to that degree.
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm influenced by so many people and so many things. I think it's beautiful to be influenced by others, but there's a difference between influence and stealing someone's voice completely, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's the thing. I don't think you have to reinvent the wheel when you're starting something new, but you certainly have to have your own take on it. You don't have to reinvent it, but you can't just rebuild it. So I'm wondering what was going through your mind then. I'm going to circle back to you mentioning you going back to school, sitting in a classroom, taking all of these notes about the golden age of marketing while other people around you are not paying any attention. And you have this whole cadre of experiences that, you've just given to us. How are you then, in your mind, piecing all of these bits together to string up what we see now as this, like, brilliant face of not just your brand, but your life, and then making yourself a really successful online presence that then grows and builds your business and promotes you without you even having to do anything but be yourself?
Wait, can you repeat that? I'm just kidding.
I was like, oh God, no, please don't make me.
One second. Okay. I didn't, you know, kind of like I said before, I didn't know what I was doing. There was no hindsight or rule book or anything, so I didn't really know what I was doing. But fast forward to 2020, now I have all of this hindsight, I can go back and say, well, I recognize that I wanted to go back, just talking about the education thing. I was always big on education, but I come from a family where nobody has formal education. So I never felt like that was attainable until I got to be a little older, and I had older meaning 22. And then I started to meet people who were very influential. A lot of people to this day that I'm still very close with that influenced me and inspired me quite a bit, and decided that, okay, I'm going to go to school and I'm going to get some formal education in marketing and business, because I recognize that this is the most business-driven economy in the history of planet Texas. So I need to get some sort of education under my belt. But at that time, Vinyl Ranch I didn't have t-shirts. I had a single t-shirt. I did not have a t-shirt company. I did not have a, you know, email newsletter. I didn't have all of these things. I didn't have a website for Vinyl Ranch. I really just had these parties that I did. But I did have my other career in music as a remixer and a DJ, and I was doing very well. At this time, not even to talk about money, but I'll just as an example, because a lot of DJs still don't even make this much money 12 years later. When I released this mixtape, it was a mixtape called Life of the Party that I put out in 2008 that was picked up by Rolling Stone like the weekend I put it out on Memorial Day. And it was a mixtape that was comprised of a handful of them were remixes that I had made in my apartment. But it was like a mashup of club music and indie rock anthems. It was a lot of heavy and yeahs, LCD Sound System, MIA, a lot of rap, a lot of classic rap stuff. So I put that out and that picked up. And this hotel club owner guy in Dallas saw the write-up somewhere. Oh, there was a write-up in a local, like, what would you call it? The Socialite Rag in Houston called Modern Luxury. I think there's one in Dallas as well. That's how he saw it. So he saw the story about me in the Modern Luxury, contacts somebody. So I didn't have an agent at that time, but he contacted someone who reached out to me, who was some sort of local agent, talent buyer guy. His name's Dan. I came out of J&D Entertainment. Hits me up and asks me, it's like, hey, blah, 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 Hotel Zaza in Houston wants to talk to you about becoming the new resident DJ. And at that time, Hotel Zaza was like the hottest spot in Houston. That's where all the celebrities would stay when they came into town. Lady Gaga stayed there. One night, you know, Robin Thicke was there. All of the professional athletes would hang out. There was a club there called the Monarch, a restaurant bar club. Turned into a club post 10 p.m. It was a nightclub. So, that's what I was doing at that time. I was making, while I was in college, I was making $1,500 a night, and I was DJing 2 and 3 nights a week at this spot, which was right down the street from my house. Probably wow. There was no Uber. I would drive up there. Yeah, I was making way more money than I needed at the time. I was just very fortunate. And I was in college, and I was going to this really nice private Catholic university. And at that time, I was solely focused on developing my brand as a DJ who was in the lane that I occupied at the time, which is club music and, you know, a little bit of rap. But mostly I was just caught up in my universe that I created in the music blog community. And that was priority. Secondary to that, Vinyl Ranch, I think there was a period of time of 2 years where I didn't do anything with Vinyl Ranch. And maybe it was 2010 to 2012. I think there was a 2-year hiatus. Lee, my partner in the beginning, moved to New York. And then he put the bug in my ear initially about, hey, you need to come and do Vinyl Ranch up in New York. And that's kind of, I'll talk about that a little later on the, you know, enterprising component of the Vinyl Ranch DJ party. But yeah, I just thought that, you know, I can go and I can take these real time. I can take this information that I'm learning in school and apply it real time to these music projects. And then very shortly after, I ended up applying that stuff to Vinyl Ranch and making it a little more large, appear to be larger, more larger than life than it actually was. And I learned how to do that through formal marketing, mostly through the golden age of marketing and advertising. There was a book called, I'd have to think about it, but it's this iconic book in academia about the golden age of marketing and advertising. But my grandfather, who was a country musician, who was actually a gay country musician in the 60s and 70s, I think my grandpa came out when he was about 50. But he was one of those guys that was just, you would just say, oh, he's like, look at him. He's so eccentric. He's an eccentric. Like, no, he's just a gay man. sorry, burst your bubble, but eccentric, I don't know. We might need to review all of these eccentric characters in history and go back, oh, they're actually just gay men. They weren't eccentric at all.
Yes.
The average gay man is, which I think is beautiful. But my grandfather was an advertising dude, and my mom always, whenever my mom and I drink cheap wine together and shoot the shit and talk about family stuff, she always mentions how she sees very much my grandfather in everything that I do. He was an advertising guy. I inherited a bunch of his, inherited, is that the correct word? Whenever he passed away, my mom gave me a box of his things. And he had all of these little Mead notebooks and with all of these scribblings, like these advertising kind of slogan scribblings. He was one of those slogan guys. I think for where he was at that point in his life or where he was geographically, living outside of Detroit, there was maybe like some sort of, like you'd call like the dot-com boom, I don't know, where Detroit, the automotive industry, was maybe hiring people to write slogans for them or big corporations, I don't know. But this guy thought that he literally, what's the Coke is it? There's a Pepsi slogan too. Notebooks and notebooks and notebooks. Full of these insane, I need to post them somewhere because, actually I don't, I need to absorb them all.
Don't share those. Not yet.
Some of this shit is genius. Genius. Like, so good. But, yeah, that guy, that's, like, my DNA. Like, it's just in my DNA. It's so effortless. And my mom works in marketing, and she just effortlessly, like, shit just, like, flies off the tongue, like, all day. So if you, like, look at my captions or some of the t-shirt things or remixes I do, like, it's always happening. Processes are happening in the background all the time. And I don't even have control of it. They just come out at will. It's nuts.
Which truly is very inspirational because I probably, on a very regular basis, will say to Angela, like, have you seen Dave's latest post? Have you seen that meme? How do people come up with this shit? Because it is.
And then that's funny, but then the caption is like, it's something on another level.
Yeah.
The one-two punch. The caption's usually the
one-two punch.
So hopefully people read the captions. I do want to say that I do not consider Vinyl Ranch a meme page or a meme project.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people come online and they discover it usually because someone tags them in something, right? Mm-hmm. Some foreigner, outsider from another galaxy discovers it and it's like, oh, check out this meme page. I'm like, oh, they sell t-shirts and like DJ party. Why would I go to that? Or, you know, it could be a number of things, but I will use this moment to promote the next leg in this adventure for Vinyl Ranch. Probably 3 or 4 years ago, I always knew that I was going to turn Vinyl Ranch into a record label. I don't want to say record label, but would offer the component of releasing artists' original music. So I will say that. Call it what you will.
Ooh, very cool.
I'm finally getting underway. I just had a one-hour chat with the record pressing plant in Austin. I've been working on my A&R. I've got all my guys lined up, my bands are submitting music. So it's going to be really cool. It's going to be different from what's out there, what anyone has seen before. I know everyone thinks that whenever they get into a project, it's like, well, ultimately, you're releasing physical product, hopefully, and streaming, and you're going to make money on publishing. Pretty simple. It's a pretty simple business. It's also a really shady business. So I've taken the counsel of some friends of mine who've been in the biz for quite a while that are kind of helping me distill this down to like the most fair and business, what's the best way to say that? Sounding like a total schmuck. trying to find the equilibrium of cost, benefit, and everybody gets what they deserve while simultaneously operating a successful business. I'll say that. But I don't want, you know, I don't want to steal from artists or, you know, these phony administrative costs to recoup documents. And like, yeah, I'm not trying to do that. I try to keep Vinyl Ranch in spirit of what a cowboy is, and just Vinyl Ranch is an urban cowboy lifestyle brand, right? Like that's the way to try to know. It's an urban cowboy lifestyle brand, kind of reimagining what an urban cowboy is. Obviously some of us ride horses, a lot of us don't. You don't need to ride a horse to be a cowboy. Sorry. Or a cowgirl, excuse me. Cowgirl. But just kind of taking it, simplifying it, living off the land, using resources that are around you, being good to people and being fair and being strong and being courageous and doing right by others at all costs when at all possible. And that's kind of the, for the most part, I would say those are, those would be a part of the Vinyl Ranch mission statement and everything that I do, whether a conscious choice or not, like that's generally the way it goes. And I'm moving forward as I bring more people into this experience under this umbrella. I really want everyone to be taken care of. I also need to take care of myself. But if you ever meet someone who's worked with me, for instance, the show we did in Tulsa, like I didn't get paid any money. I just threw this party and was trying to get these bands money to pay the rent. And like, generally, that's how I operate. I'll sell merchandise. I'll make money that way. Or I'll get, you know, I'll overcharge Google to DJ some dumb party and make my money that way.
Casual.
Yeah, I mean, I do it all the time. And, you know, back when, you know, pre Vinyl Ranch, as we know now, when it was just a single DJ night, I was a fashion corporate kind of like sports DJ. I DJed, you know, Sony NBA All-Star Weekend, resident DJ for stuff like that, and then we DJ, you know, Tom Ford fashion shows and opening parties for Chanel, and I DJed John Barbados's book launch party. And so I was just in a different bracket altogether, a different sphere of everything. But I learned slowly that, oh, I can marry these two. And also now that the kind of like the country western aesthetic has become more popular and more accepted and more embraced across all blocks of life, I think it's a good time. You know, over the past 5 years, it's felt like things are kind of coming into phase, and it's a good time to marry myself to this thing as opposed to keeping a wall between the two of us.
To this mistress, please. Yeah. Some respect.
Who's not my...
Your leading lady. My wife. Okay, so now I'm really curious, though, because this has come up a couple of times about you not identifying this as, like, these memes are just a byproduct of what you're doing, but it does seem to be something that, like you said, a lot of people identify with you or with the brand of Vinyl Ranch. Yeah. So I'm wondering how those evolved. Like, how did it come to be that these were all over your page? Because it is, if nothing else, an interesting byproduct that, like you said, not all cowboys and cowgirls have to ride horses. So how are you bringing people together in this space? And how are memes uniting us? How aren't they?
The meme thing, I don't know. When I first started the Vinyl Ranch Instagram, I knew that my good friend Maurice, who's a part of the Vinyl Ranch family, he said something to me once that I never forgot. And he said, I don't remember the context now, but he said, everything we do has got to be larger than life. So I created the Instagram for Vinyl Ranch. That was kind of the subtext. It's like, okay, I understand that I can't put out larger than life content all day, every day, 50 times a day. But when I first started the Vinyl Ranch Instagram in 2014, I was posting 30 times a day.
Wow.
30 times. But there was no algorithm. There was not, like, none of that. So to that point, even when I would release a product on Instagram, for instance, there would be a t-shirt. I put the t-shirt up. I have 1,100 followers. I put the t-shirt up for pre-sale. The second I refresh after I post it, I've got 60 likes, like, seconds later, and a bunch of comments and people wanting to pre-order it. Now the way you interface with Instagram is so different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, bizarro. So I've actually been trained by my algorithm to post more meme content. And I don't do it because I'm passionate about making memes. Like, I'm a 40-year-old man. Do you think I want to spend my time? It's like, no. If you ever wonder what I'm doing, it's 4:14. If I were not on the phone with you, obviously would be out running. Or I would be on an auction website collecting Studio 54 and disco memorabilia and fine art from the 70s on auction websites. That's what a 40-year-old man with a wife and kids is doing. Or like buying rare wine or trying to find a place to buy. That's what I'm actually doing. So I'm who's part of the Vinyl Ranch family. It's a group effort for the most part. I've got a few other people that, I mean, there are a handful of people that contribute in various capacities, but there's, you know, I have like a meme, I don't want to say a meme ghostwriter, but a collaborator. He's not a ghostwriter. He sends me memes all day long, you know. 3 out of 10 of them will use. Some of them don't work. Some of them miss the mark. Some of them are too risque. I've got myself into hot water a few times because I did not copyright some of the memes that Craig has sent to me. But I often repost other people's stuff, and, you know, I like to support the community, and if somebody posts some shit that's dank meme fire, like, I'll repost it. I don't really care.
I don't care.
In regards to the meme stuff, like, people are so funny and so serious about their memes. I don't watermark a damn thing. Who cares? Like, I stole a picture of George Strait some AP, you know, credible photographer put up, and I put some text on it that was inspired by somebody else. I'm not going to get mad at you because you repost it and don't credit me or be like, you know, super extra in the comments, calling people thieves and saying people are so like disconnected and have lost the plot entirely. Who cares? Like, who really cares? I certainly don't.
Life is bigger than the internet.
There are a couple of brands out there. I don't say brands. There are a couple of, I'll say, entities, Instagram, maybe they identify as brands, that one of them has straight up stolen one of my designs and resells it and turns the comments off because they have a beef with me. They're literally selling. I stopped selling one of my shirts. When people ask me where to buy the shirt, I direct them to their website.
Damn.
Yeah, I'm like, why don't you go buy it from these people that stole it from me? They literally posted it and said, Vinyl Ranch doesn't copyright any of their stuff. You can literally just take it off the internet and resell it. You know what? Whatever. They're just trying to antagonize me and pull me into some sort of battle, and I don't even want to, like, I don't want to say I'm too good for that. I'm just not that petty.
Yeah.
I don't really, also. Like, I'm arguing in a phone? Like, really?
So let's touch on that before we wrap up, because I know that we have a lot of people listening that are just getting into some of this stuff. They are inspired, and one of the first walls you hit outside of inspiration is like somebody stealing your stuff, how you feel about that. So talk to us a little bit about copyrights, trademarks, lawyers, all that fun
intellectual property.
Yes, intellectual property. And that balance that you have between like something is going to go grow its own legs and promote you, and who cares if it gets stolen, and something that you want to protect.
That's kind of what I've learned, the double-edged sword of copyright. People are really funny. I meet people all the time that tell me, hey, I'm starting my own brand of refrigerators, or I'm inventing this jacket, this thing for a lawnmower, or I'm starting my own shirt.
All the time.
Outlandish shit. I wish, sidebar really fast, like, I want to start a podcast for people that have lots of Instagram followers. People that have any, again, I hate to use the word influencer, because I feel like that's as filthy as saying hipster. So I don't but people that have some influence, right? That have, like, the conversations they have with perfect strangers in their DMs about things. And some of it is, like, very heartwarming and it's very genuine. And I'm not discrediting those people. It's great to communicate. But sometimes there's the person, it's like the pretty girl who has the guy that sends 50 messages, you never respond. And it's them having a conversation with themselves.
Yeah.
Those situations where sometimes people are just asking me some of these questions, and I want to respond to everyone when I can, even if it's just simple forward something. But I think there's a market out there for a conversation between people that have influence about conversations they have in their DM and what that looks like.
I'm on board.
I've read some things. I've said some things. Damn, really? Didn't think I was going to stoop this low, or I don't know. It's nuts. Long story long, copyright, IP. I have a junior college education in copyright now, via running a remix project. I've learned quite a bit about what you can get away with, what you cannot. In regards directly to going back to where we first started, copywriting, patenting, copywriting, anything. People want to copyright something that doesn't, I don't say that no one wants, but what's the value in copywriting a thing when it doesn't exist yet in the marketplace? It's different. It's like, I drew a picture of a starfish and I'm going to put it on a t-shirt in 10 years. So I'm going to copyright it right now. It's like, okay, like, why don't you save your money? Why don't you develop your product? Why don't you keep on keeping on and revisit? Whenever you put something to market, here's kind of what I'm dealing with right now, is I have 50 to 100 different designs on my website at all times. And some of them are genius. Some of them are clickbait. Some of them are illegal. Some of them I'm very passionate about. Some of them are things I created while smoking weed, drinking ginger peach tea, my liver, that don't mean anything. And often those are the ones that hit the hardest, which is so funny. Listen to any Gwen Stefani interview from way back, and she'll say, yeah, I wrote Don't Speak while I was taking a shit in like 30 seconds. And like, that's our biggest song. It's stuff like that. It just comes off the dome, and it is what it is. Copywriting something means you're legally obligated to protect it. So I don't want to protect anything necessarily. There are a few things I want to protect, some of them. My country and Western deal is copyrighted, though I don't put register, you know, trademark or any of that stuff on my designs. Like some of them, the iconic ones that I've been selling over and over for years, those are definitely copyrighted. But it's just like, you don't want to see somebody violate your copyright, because then that starts to consume your bandwidth, and then you're worried about it, and then you've got to call lawyers. And it's just this money pit. And it's like, who has time for it? B, in the end, when you finally take it to court, whoever's got more money is going to win most of the time. Mm-hmm. I've obviously received, as you would imagine, a ton of cease and desists from various entities from, I probably shouldn't say, but country music artists to like footwear brands to very famous modern artists to very notable modern artists to artists' rights societies, like all sorts of things. And, you know, I've been counseled by my attorney, my IP guy in Houston, and, you know, in a nutshell, what I've learned is you can get away with quite a bit, but is it worth the money fighting it? And 99 times out of 100, if you know you barred something and maybe didn't change it enough, then maybe you should just do the right thing and agree to cease and desist. Without putting myself into hot water or admitting any sort of guilt or anything. That's just a part of the game. Like, even when I was a music remixer, this would happen to me all the time. I'll talk about that. I did a Lady Gaga remix of Born This Way the night it came out when the single dropped, and it was up on the internet, I think, like 1 a.m., and I was already receiving cease and desist from her label.
That happens
all the time. You have people that are, their job is to enforce trademarks and copyrights and stuff. So I think if you can get away with not doing it, just don't do it. But if you want to explore that, there's a huge subculture of people that love bootleg merchandise. And I don't want to say bootleg. That love, bootleg means you are making fake Nike products. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, the Gucci t-shirt is a great example. You'll find globally, there's this huge market for bootleg Gucci, mm-hmm. which is designers basically taking the Gucci logo and making their own Gucci t-shirt. And the Grateful Dead are really cool about it. They actually encourage, to my understanding, they built this whole, I mean, obviously there's the entire community and culture of Grateful Dead, but they built their own self-sustaining economy around it too. If you go to a Grateful Dead show and you go out to the lot, they basically give you the design assets and say, here is a template for making Grateful Dead merchandise. We have these three iconic images that you can turn into anything and you can sell them and you can stay on the road with us for this entire year by hawking your wares in the parking lot before the show. And that's kind of how the Deadheads, I have a bunch of I have a few Deadheads, actually I have a lot of Deadheads in my family. And that's kind of what they do. And I've learned through, you know, friends that are in that, you know, into that community and subculture, that that's kind of how that works. So in that regard, like, it's cool to bootleg stuff and it's cool to remix and reimagine. But whenever you start dealing with, you know, Brooks and Dunn and Garth Brooks and guys like that, they don't see, maybe don't see the value. Or, or, I mean, this is really important to note, they don't have people on their team that are living the 2020 business social media reality. They don't understand the value. Somebody like me, or someone like me, not me personally, but a brand like mine who embraces an era and kind of breathes new life into it, that makes, I don't want to say makes them relevant. Like, Garth Brooks doesn't need anybody to make him relevant. But it opens them up. It opens up this door, this filthy door, into the dirty closet where all of the heathens live. Bootleg merchandise. I need to find a better, I need to find a replacement for the word bootleg, because I don't mean bootleg. It's something else. It's like the unofficial merchandise that independent designers make that isn't picked up by the brands or the artists or whatever.
I don't know, but I feel like there's something great in there with like a cowboy boot and something that you can use to your advantage here.
Totally agree. Bootleg, that's fun. Boot cut,
that's
bootleg.
Funny. Boot cut. Ah. There we go. All right, so he is better at this.
And this is why he's the professional, and we are not.
It all comes full circle.
Hey, shout out to everybody in my DMs who's sharing their brilliant t-shirt ideas with me on a daily basis. Ooh. Not that I don't need your help, but the second I take somebody's t-shirt idea, then I'm going to, at some point, they're going to want money in their hand. They're going to want cash money in their right hand. I'm not doing that. Thank you for your ideas. Appreciate them. But thanks, but no thanks.
Just a friendly reminder.
Well, there you...
Thanks, but, you know, I can't. Like, sorry.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it, folks. You have the advice. You have the story. You have a lot of inspiration going forward. And I was certainly so intrigued to hear all of this because, again, I feel like I missed out. I didn't go to Tulsa with Abby. And
you did miss out.
Yeah, I missed out on a lot of her bullshit, and I think a lot of fun stuff too. So,
yeah. Hopefully, I answered some of these questions that you had and gave some clarity to what it is that I'm doing over here.
No, absolutely. And I think a huge takeaway from this is being true to yourself in the way you present yourself, because authenticity sells above everything else. And when you're working, to always be mindful of learning from your own mistakes, learning from what other people are doing, but putting your own spin on that and finding all the unique ways to really make it work for you. Because at the end of the day, that's ultimately the best marketing strategy.
You know, to some degree, if Instagram went bankrupt and it went away, I would be fine. If you were to come back to me, if Instagram went away and you came back 6 months later, there's a high likelihood I'd still be doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, kind of going back to what I said in the beginning, like, this is just my life. It's a lifestyle. What's the best adjective? There are a few elements of theatrics and pageantry here and there, like a little bit, but it's just a little. It's fun. Like, I'm a Leo, so I'm going to make it.
There it is.
I'm going to make it my story.
Yes. Well, thank you, Dave, so much for being on today with us. We totally appreciated this.
Tell us where everyone can find you online, whether that's social media, your websites, upcoming projects. Where can they find you on the interwebs?
Everything by design is at Vinyl Ranch. So if you need to find me on across all social media, is Vinyl Ranch. Even OnlyFans is Vinyl Ranch. It might be Vinyl Launch.
Ooh, there it is.
Did it just get warmer in here?
No, Vinyl Ranch across the board.
If you somehow haven't heard of him before, definitely go check out all of his pages, but absolutely listen to the music too, because it will change things for you. So thank you for listening to another episode of
the Breaking Western Podcast, season 3. We'll see you all next week.